It up now for comments, questions.
So we have a roving microphone that can go around the audience in case anyone's voice is very quiet. But please feel free to, we'll just have a period of like 15 minutes, 20 minutes for questions. So please feel free to address any one of the of us on this particular theme and raise whatever questions you might have. What is the daily schedule like? Yeah? Well, the morning bell would go at 3 o'clock. And I remember when I first showed up as a straggly hippie off the beach, and Joseph was the abbot at Wananashat, and he said, well, we get up at three. I thought, well, they must have some kind of different clock here. But no, it's the regular system. So the morning bell goes at 3, and then meet for the morning chanting either at 3:30 or 4, depending on the monastery. You would then have a period of morning chanting and the group meditation, silent sitting meditation. And then a lot hinges around the morning alms round, the way that the sustenance for the monastery is gathered for the day. So as dawn breaks, then we would have a little bit of a tidy up period, sweeping and cleaning. And then as dawn breaks, we would put our robes on and then go out into the local villages for the alms round. And those of you who will stay for this evening for our movie night, you'll see numerous pieces of film of the alms round going through the villages of northeast Thailand, and also the villages of West Sussex in southern England, which is a sight to be seen. Also, actually, we now in most of our monasteries in the West, we regularly go alms round. Even in Mendocino County in Ukiah, we go once a week on the daily alms. We go once a week rather than daily, but. The weather is very hot in Thailand, so you'd aim to be back from the alms round by 7 in the morning. People get up early because of trying to use the cool hours of the morning, so that when you walk through the villages just after dawn, already people are up and have cooked the rice, and those who wish to support the monasteries are out on the street and are ready to make their offerings to the monks walking by. So this is a very beautiful and ancient custom. It's from the time of the Buddha. Again, when I first went, Joseph took me out on an alms round in the first couple of days of being at Wat Nanachat. I thought, wow, this is amazing. This is this wonderful ancient ceremony. It can only happen like once a year. Such a special and extraordinary thing. All these people waiting out on the streets so early in the day. And what luck, what fortune. And then I was, in my kind of effusive way, saying this to him as we were walking back to the monastery. He said, no, this happens every day. It's been happening every day for 2,500 years. This is nothing special. So then we'd have the morning meal. The morning meal and the only meal of the day would then be quite early. Get back, and then all the food would be shared out between the members of the community. Equally, so you would give up whatever you've been given on the alms round. Usually a number of the villagers, mostly the village women, would come in and prepare food and to be added to what you got on the alms round. And the meal would be offered usually around 8 or 8:30, and that's the one meal of the day. And so you stoke up in the morning and then just run on it for the rest of the day. So then the meal is a fairly formal time. As again, you'll see in the films this evening, everything is, we sit in a very orderly fashion according to the order of reigns, how old we are in the monastic order. We eat silently, and then after the things have been cleared out, everyone helps with tidying things up, putting things away, and then the rest of the day is, In Ajahn Chah's monastery, you'd have generally open time until 3 in the afternoon, when there would be the communal chores, so that you could, your encouragement was to go back to your cabin, your kuti, and do walking meditation, sitting meditation, and then at 3 you'd gather to haul water, because there were no mains water. You know, the water's in the ground, you dig a hole, you put it in a bucket, you pull it out. And then carrying the water around, because there's no gravity feed or pipelines around the monasteries in the early days. So you carry the water to all the places around the monasteries that needed water, like toilets and kitchen and so on, bathing places. So that was a lot of the daily work, was then hauling water, carrying the water, and then also sweeping the leaves, because being in the forest, you know, even as you swept the ground, the leaves would continue to fall. So then you'd haul the water, do leaf sweeping, clearing the paths. And all of these things, there's a particular ways that you do it and particular ways you don't do it. And so one of the main elements of our teaching and training, as Ajahn Pasana was saying, was like just coordinating our bodies with the daily tasks and learning how to do things without immolating ourselves or causing some kind of gross faux pas, you know, by the way that we did something or kind of breaking some sort of social etiquette that we weren't aware of. And so then after having got hot and sweaty doing all the work, then you'd bathe, and that would just be bathing from a large water jar, just standing on a little sort of brick pad outside. And then in the evening, we would usually gather for the evening chanting. Sometimes there'd be meditation first, and then the chanting, it could vary the order. But everyone would gather, and you'd have the evening chanting, and then meditation. And oftentimes Ajahn Chah, whoever was the elder, would be giving a Dharma talk. A lot of the instruction, sort of day-to-day instruction or kind of hands-on instruction, would be given in the informal times. As was described by before, like going to find Ajahn Chah, going sitting around and listening to him, being with him, being his attendant was always a much sought-after job. So a lot of the instruction is kind of in informal situations. The Dharma talks from the high seat would be more often more kind of generalized and more for useful for everyone. Going through the particular details of your own questions and doubts and interests would happen in more informal times. Often after the evening session, if the Dharma talk hadn't been 3 or 4 hours long, or even if it had, sometimes people would linger around afterwards and go and follow Ajahn Chah back to his kuti, and he would be happy to stay up. I mean, he had this most amazing disrespect for time. You know, like Ajahn Sumedho was saying, it's late, kind of, what's the time? We're getting late. It's like, he had no concept of late. Day or night, you know, if there was interest and there was people wanted to hear the Dhamma and there was an interesting and engaging dialogue going on, he'd just stay with it. It was not uncommon for him to be still talking to people at 1, 2, 3 in the morning. Sometimes you'd be at his kuti with him and you'd hear the 3 o'clock bell going. And then you'd just say, okay, time to go morning chanting.
I think it's noteworthy of that. I think many of the most profound teachings that happened were kind of in the informal setting of underneath his kuti, his little hut that he had. This wonderful kind of setting that was it was the coolest, literally, both cool place to be. And there was something safe and quiet, and so often many of the most profound experiences that many of us had happened there, and in informal times, you know, after the meal back there, and of course everyone would follow him like the Pied Piper back to his and kind of hang.
Either one of you. I've only gone one way so far.
Short, sweet.
Okay. I was afraid somebody was going to ask, why did you disrobe? But that's not the question. So. So I think one important point is that the way Achan Chah trained people is you weren't there to prepare you for something else, even though a lot of us went with this agenda, 6 months, a year, 2 years, whatever, or even when he said you have to stay at least 5 years, then you got it in mind, okay, 5 years, contract, deal. But that wasn't really the way he was training people, like, this is going to prepare you for something else. This, we often talk about practice in daily life or practice as a way of life or living your practice. This was really it. There was nothing else. There was really no future that you could think about, but many of us did get to the point where, for one reason or another, we decided to move on. And it does happen sometimes in Thailand. People disrobe and go back and ordain, and disrobe and ordain again, disrobe again. So we're all different people with different dispositions and burdens and different karma behind us. And some people take to the monastic life very easily and the asceticism. And for some of us, like me, it was usually pretty difficult. Not being ascetic by nature and being lazy by nature, it was pretty much a struggle most of the time. Which is not to say it wasn't beneficial, or that there wasn't a lot of happiness at times, because you couldn't be around Achan Chah without experiencing happiness, but. The phrase that I always had in mind was the point of diminishing returns that a friend of ours used to use, that I felt enduring and hanging in there had given me as much benefit as it was going to give me at that point, and somehow I would be able to better continue my practice in lay life. And talk about the benefits of lay life, well, I'm still not sure about that. I usually, on paper, you can make a good case for it. But in practice, it's just a constant challenge. Just keep your head above water and remember how you're supposed to deal with things. I urge people in robes to stay there, and urge all my friends to usually go get some robes for a while if they can. I think maybe the main point is that the teaching of the Buddha is very vast. Talk about the 84,000 doors to the Dharma, and there are many different teachings and approaches for different people. And for a person to change the worldly mind to aim at escaping from worldliness and from birth and death is a huge undertaking. It's a life's work, and whichever way you do it, it entails a lot of work. And there are a lot of different approaches to it, but and I know Achan Pasano doesn't want me sending everybody to ordain with him, but I think you do better following his way than my way.
The little incident that Ajahn Jitendra was recounting this morning about me oversleeping. It really was an extraordinary event. Actually, Joseph was the abbot at the time, and I was his attendant. And Ajahn Chah happened to have been staying at the international monastery, Wat Phananchat, for a few days. And I'd woken up, and I thought, wow, the moon is really bright. And then another couple of seconds went by and I thought, the moon is really bright. And then I saw my clock had stopped and I just ran because I had no idea what the time was. And I got to the back of the meeting hall and the early alms rounds all went out at dawn at 5:15. The one that went to the nearest village went about much later, about 6:15, 6:30. And Ajahn Prabhakaro and Lumpo were going to go on that one. So I thought, okay, they're still here, I'm safe. Okay, pretend nothing happened. And so I was trying to do my cover-up, but of course my eyes were all swollen and, you know. So I was busying myself and then preparing their robes and getting them ready for the alms round. And one of the duties of the attendant is like tying the little tags on the kind of loop and tag on the corner of the robes to help prepare the robes for the elders. And so I'm kneeling down at Ajahn Chah's feet doing the tags on his robe. And he said something, just made a comment. And I looked up in this very sort of sheepish and fearful way to Joseph. And then Joseph, you know, has got this huge smile on his face. And he said, he said, sleep is delicious. And then he has this big grin, and I turned and looked at Ajahn Chah's face, and he had this like foot-wide grin on his face. And at that moment, I realized, this is very, very different. You know, I'd never met an authority figure who at that point would not have scolded me or blasted me or put me down or something. And there was this complete love. And total understanding, no blame. And it was something in me went, I've never met this before. This is new. And that was one of gave incredible faith. That whatever this is, I want it. I'll go for this.